You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia.
Good afternoon, everybody. I am Commander Tom Garcia, and this is the American Hour on the USA Talk Radio Network. If you want to see our actual site, you can go to usatalkradionetwork.com. And, of course, my lovely co-host is with me today, Paula Lausanne Osman. How are you doing today, Paula?
Doing great, Tom. How are you?
Good, good. Everything's going good here. Of course, I'm broadcasting live today from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Flew down here last night in a 767, and Paula, of course, is in the Boston area broadcasting from there. We're glad you could join us. And, of course, if you want to call in today, the number is 310-982-4145. That's 310-982-4145. And we're going to have a guest, kind of a guest slash additional co-host today, Bella D'Angelo. She's got her own talk show going now on her website if you go to belladangelo.com. And let me just verify that because I've been to her page and I was helping her do some work with her webpage today. And, of course, I could have gotten the address wrong. You know, I'm just clicking and going where it says. But, yeah, it's belladangelo.com, and that's spelled BellaDangelo.com. BellaDangelo.com. And she just moved to Texas. She was up in North Dakota, and she's got some interesting stories to tell about the oil drilling that's going on up there because it's private land. It's not being controlled by the federal government. It's private land, and it's going like gangbusters. So she was involved in the oil industry there for a little while. She's now looking at doing some full-time broadcasting, and I have to take some credit for that. It's because I contacted her and found her to be an interesting conservative with a unique perspective on things and talked her into joining the USA Talk Radio Network. So she is broadcasting from her own site right now, but we're going to get her fully up and running with the network as soon as we can. And I will be joining her on some of her shows throughout the week. So I'll be posting that on the webpage and putting that out via Twitter and Facebook. Of course, you can follow me at on Twitter at The American Hour. And you can follow Paula on Twitter at Megawatt Queen. And, of course, the Facebook page for The American Hour Radio Show is just that, The American Hour Radio Show page. So just go look for that on Facebook, and we put in lots of information out there on Facebook. So you'll find out when I'm going to be on Bella's show, and that's going to be earlier in the day, and we'll be talking about similar things. And then she's going to be joining us at times on this show in the afternoon to talk about what's going on. So she'll be calling in here probably in a little bit. Before we get to that, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this article I'm writing on my transformation, not to conservatism, but as a political activist. Always been conservative, but how did I become a political activist? And I read a little bit of it yesterday. I'm not going to go through that again today, but I want to focus on the paragraph where I talked about Lincoln. And as I said yesterday, Lincoln warned us that the greatest danger to the United States of America would not come from abroad, but it would come from within. Now, I only had a couple more sentences there. I paraphrased Lincoln, but I went and got his actual speech that he gave, and that speech was given back in 1838, January 27th, 1838. It's a young men's college in Springfield, Illinois, and I believe he was only 28 years old at the time. So this was before he was president, and he had a lot of interesting insight. He talks a lot. The reason most people don't know about the speech is, boy, it's a speech that you know, could put you to sleep. But
yeah, it's a long one.
Unbelievable. What's that?
It's a long one.
It's a long one, yeah. But when I found it, I went right through the whole thing the very first time many years ago, and there are some real gems in there. And some of the things didn't mean as much to me until this last presidential election. And this was – I went back and reread this, and this was before – our current president was elected, but it scared the you-know-what out of me. And really, I know that this article I'm writing is talking about how do I go from a conservative couch potato to a congressional candidate in 6 months. This was really it. This article or this speech scared me. And then I started looking for ways to get involved and help, and it grew from there. And so that's what the article is going to talk about, is my transformation and how I went from a couch potato to a political activist.
Mm-hmm.
But let me read to you a little bit from the speech, and I'm not going to – I've got to kind of jump around a little bit because it is a long speech. But when you go and grab the gems out of it, here's in one of the paragraphs toward the end. He's talking about the Constitution and how our founders risked everything. They staked their reputations, their lives on not only getting independence for our country, but the Constitution they put together, because it's a Constitution that has never been tried, anything like that. Actually giving, and as he said, the capability of a people to govern themselves. This was unheard of. So they risked everything, and he says the experiment is successful, and thousands have won their deathless names in making it so. But the is caught, and I believe it is true that with the catching end the pleasure of the chase. This field of glory is harvested, and the crop is already appropriated. What he's saying here is the Constitution, this experiment that succeeded, is done. The only thing really to do, and he talks in other portions of the speech about this, the only thing to do now is to maintain it, to maintain it. But he continues, he says, but new reapers will arise, and they too will seek a field. Yes, they will. And that's one of the problems. Well, there are always new reapers arising. But then it starts to get a little more interesting when he talks about, let me just read directly what he has to say. Many great and good men sufficiently qualified for any task they should undertake may ever be found whose ambition would inspire to do nothing beyond a seat in Congress, a gubernatorial, or a presidential chair. But such belong not to the family of the lion or the tribe of the eagle. What he's getting at, and then he says, what, you think you these places would satisfy an Alexander, a Caesar, or a Napoleon? Never. Towering, and this is where I lose people because I'm not going to even read that. I used to give this in my campaign speech. Let me just jump on down. Distinction will be his paramount object. He's talking about, is it unreasonable to believe that somebody with extreme ambition would rise up amongst us and want the same kind of glory that our founding fathers achieved? And he says, no, it's not unreasonable to believe that. Distinction will be his paramount object. And although he would as willingly, perhaps more so, acquire it by doing good as harm, yet that opportunity being passed and nothing left to do in the way of building up, he will boldly set to the task of pulling down. So I looked at that and I thought, oh my gosh, he predicted this president. And that's what's going on. That's what we've seen transform. And when I started my congressional campaign, I warned people, you're going to see a major assault on the Constitution coming. And that's precisely what we've seen. So that's a little bit more background on that short paragraph that will be in my article. You know, there are some other things in this speech that he talks about that I find, you know, very informative and warning. But let me see. Here we go. Is he talking about the kind of person that would rise up and want the distinction of our founders? He says it scorns to this kind of person. It denies that it is glory enough to serve under any chief. It scorns to tread in the footsteps of any predecessor. In other words, it needs to cut its own path. It needs to create its own legacy. However illustrious, it thirsts and burns for distinction, and if possible, it will have it, whether at the expense of emancipating slaves or enslaving free men. It doesn't matter. If we got to enslave people, if that's how I get my distinction, I'll do it. If I free people, and that's what works, that's what I'll do. It doesn't matter. It's all about me, 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 me. Sound familiar?
It does.
And there are a lot of people like that, but I think we're seeing that to an extreme that I personally have never seen it in my lifetime. You take a president like Ronald Reagan who says, government is not the solution, it's the problem. Yet we've got a president today who says, government's the solution. You remember when we did the stimulus plan under this current president, he said, we're in such dire straits that the only organization that can save us at this point is government. And that's an outright lie. I don't buy that. I don't believe it. And we see that it didn't really do anything. And it was a huge waste of money, quite honestly. here we are still in this mess. Yep. So that's a whole other story. But that's a little bit of the background of Abraham Lincoln, Lincoln warning us about the greatest danger to our nation. It would come from within. It would come from somebody or even some people, but he actually says, here's what he says, is it unreasonable then to expect that some man possessed of the loftiest genius coupled with ambition sufficient to push it to its utmost stretch, will it sometime spring up among us? And yep. When such a one does, it will require the people to be united with each other, attached to the government and laws, generally intelligent, to successfully frustrate his designs. Wow. So I think he foretold the future pretty accurately. And now I default to Benjamin Franklin. And how is it that we end up in this situation where we write a constitution? And I know the libs out there say, but it's a fluid and living document, Tom. No, it's not. It was designed to do one thing and restrain the federal government so that the federal government would not step on the sovereignty of the states. We are a
Correct.
Union of states. We are not just one big nation. And so that was the purpose of the Constitution. So really what it boils down to, if you want to say in the simplest terms what that shackling of the federal government to protect us is about, the Constitution protects us from human nature. And human nature is to take power and take more and more and more. So the idea was we'll restrict the federal government and what it can do so that it can't just keep taking power and grow and get bigger and bigger. Of course, the Federalists, once we got going in our nation with our Constitution, decided they did want government to get bigger and stronger, and so they started kind of rationalizing their way through the Constitution to allow for that. And as I said yesterday, Thomas Jefferson felt like he had saved the Union, and he was only our third president. We had a two-term Washington, one-term Adams, and here we are, we have a president who believes that he just saved the country from the Federalist desire to destroy our existing governmental system and turn it into some form of a monarchy. Not necessarily with a king, but a highly, highly centralized federal government with no sovereignty for the states. And that's how he won. He ran on state sovereignty, and the states were very upset with the direction of the federal government at the time. So today we see a very similar thing going on. They were in a unique situation back then in that they were such a young country, a young nation, and it was a union of sovereign states, that at any point a state could stand up and go, we're out of here, you're on your own, United States of America. And that's something they were very concerned about. We see that as being almost virtually thinkable situation today. It still could happen, but much more likely to have happened back then. And, of course, the Civil War really got kicked off because of state rights. It was a combination of the desire and need to continue the practice of slavery, but the state saw that as a sovereign right and that the federal government had no business intervening. And so that's why they decided to break off from the Union and form their own Union. So that's not much of a possibility today, but state rights have come up multiple times. And as I mentioned, Benjamin Franklin warned us that states would over time give up sovereignty and that the federal government would get bigger and bigger until the point where we would have ourselves the equivalent of a monarchy again. And I think a lot of people feel that way, and a lot of people that understand the Constitution, that understand our history,
right,
are the people that are these Tea Partiers, because they see the federal government taking power that it was never intended to have. And again, the libs will say, well, modern times, maybe that's what's necessary. Yeah, how's that working so far? A $14 trillion debt that we're not doing anything about. This will be the last thing I say on this debt thing, but every single politician that's putting forward a plan has no plan for cutting our debt, only for cutting the rate at which we go into debt, and that is it. So if you haven't paid attention out there, take a look at any single article, whether it's Paul Ryan's, the president's, the Democrats, anybody's proposal. It always says cutting the deficit. It never once says anything about cutting debt, only the deficit. Now, Paul Ryan's flows out that after about 10 or 15 years, we'll actually start cutting the debt. That's his plan. But for the near term, what his proposal actually does only slows down the rate at which we go into debt. Was that Bella that just called in, Paula?
It was. She was on her cell phone. She's going to call in through Skype because the call was very choppy.
Yeah, okay. Okay, good. Well, I've talked with her on Skype before, so we'll wait for her to call in on that. That should work just fine. So anyway, there's my little rant on the taxation thing. But Abraham Lincoln, and we were going to talk a little bit about this article in The American Thinker. And it was written by Chuck Roger. I like Chuck Roger. And April 24th, so just a few days ago, he wrote this. I think it actually appeared in the April 26th edition of the – well, no, today's April 26th. It was there a couple days ago. So he starts off talking about Jimmy Carter and LBJ, Great Society programs. And then, as I mentioned earlier, Ronald Reagan said, in this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. A nation suffocating under a peanut farmer's horrific policies inhaled the blast of fresh air. Today, most people who are not big government liberals understand that Reagan was right. But here's what's a little disturbing, and I think this is part of why he wrote the article, but there's a paragraph in here that it just really jumps out to me anyway. He said, 80% of Americans consistently identify themselves ideologically as something other than liberal. Recent years polling has shown that as few as 56%, so just barely a majority, of likely voters believe that government hatches more problems than solutions. Well, then if you don't think government causes more problems than solutions, actually solves more things than it causes, then you actually are a liberal. And I find very few things that government does well. And it's not, in some ways, it's not government's fault. They're trying to do things that the federal government is not equipped to do. If we had a dictator, if we had a communist party, if we had a socialist party, if we were not a republic, then some of the things that our federal government is trying to do, they would actually be able to do better, believe it or not. But they're not equipped to do it as a republic, as a democratic republic, as a representative democracy. No. They are not equipped to do it, and that's why they continually fail. So they're attempting to do things that they're not properly equipped to do. Quite honestly, I don't want them to do those things, but the bottom line is they attempt to do it. And so that's one of the problems there. It looks like Bella is back, and
she
so
is.
Let's bring her on. Bella, how are you doing?
I'm fabulous, Tom. How are you?
Good. So how's life living in Texas versus up in North Dakota?
Well, you know, when I left, it was like, you know, minus 20, minus 30, and I quickly got acclimated, because by the time that I landed here, it was like 80-some the first couple days that I was here. Big change, but and kind of back to civilization compared to Williston, I'm re-entering the culture again.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, now tell us how people can connect with you via your web page, Facebook, and Twitter, and anything else that you want to put out there so that they can find out more about your radio show.
If you go to BellaDeAngelo.com, that's my main website, and there is a IROC icon on the main page that you can click on to hear the IROC station. It's a rock station. It's internet, and it is international. We've been broadcasting for 3 weeks now, and we're being listened to in 37 countries. Texas is. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and here in the U.S., Texas is the number one state listening to our station. We've now broken into the top 50 in radio programs. And, Tom, I have to credit all of this madness that I've been doing over here to you, because you started the idea.
You're right. I did. And I can't take credit for you and your personality and your drawing people in and your drive to do this, but you're right. I did help spark something there, and I'm glad. I'm absolutely glad. So.
I mean, I thank you all on every program, because that's how this whole thing started, was that, you know, I finished writing this book. My book is If This Vortex Doesn't Slow Down, and it's available on Barnes & Noble and Borders. And I got asked once I finished writing the book what I wanted to do. And I'm so passionate about what's happening to this country and all of the life and liberty that is being taken away from us, and that we're getting away from the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. And, you know, the book read the agendas that I was so concerned about that were going to be passed at you know, mile per hour we can't clock, and what it's going to fundamentally change in our country. And so we started this branding, and then Tom and I connected over Twitter, because I was sending out these tweets, and then somehow I, you know, we got in connection, we started talking, and then Tom said, you know, did you want to come on my program, on my radio show? And I said, you know, sure, of course. I didn't know if it was just for a one-time appearance, but I'd been on, I was getting on Hannity on a regular basis. I've been on Sean Hannity's, I think, probably around 13 some times. And so, you know, Tom really started the initial passion and interest to get more on the radio. And then I remember one day I asked Gary, who'd been doing my blog spot, what it would take to also do my own program as well. And so here today, 3 weeks into it, we've been experiencing every technical glitch that you can. But hey, it's a learning curve. So mm-hmm. What you go through is, what's that?
No, I'm listening. Go ahead, honey.
And so we're finally, I think we're nearing a good pace now. We've got just about all of the little bugs taken out, but it's BellaDeAngelo.com is the main website, and then it's iRockOnline.net is the actual email or web address for the radio station. And
okay.
Friday was my first day with guests. And how fun is that? I mean, I've been sitting here kind of talking by myself, and it kind of feels like you're pretending when you do that until you actually get guests on. That is a lot of fun.
Yeah, you're not kidding about that. We've had some great guests on here so far. In fact, I'm gonna run off. I'm going to let you talk about who your guests were and who you've got coming up. But first, I'm going to go back and backtrack just a little bit and talk to people. First of all, just like with Bella's site, you can go and listen to previous shows. And so it's like you're there. The one difference is, obviously, you can't call in if you had a question, but you can listen to the show, and that's a great thing. So we've had some great people. Go look at my page on the website, usatalkradionetwork.com, and you'll see who we've had in the past, who we've got coming up. But people like Mark Ross, we had a great discussion on the Constitution, our founders. On Earth Day, I don't know if you saw this, Bella, but on Earth Day, Paul and I had Winston Scott, retired astronaut, shuttle astronaut, on talking about NASA for the whole show, and it was awesome. I mean, it was great, and it was kind of ironic that it was Earth Day, but we had him on there. We've had Paul Skousen. Bella, are you familiar with the book, The 5,000-Year Leap?
I have heard of it.
Okay. Yeah, it's really kind of a book written by Paul's father that outlines how we ended up with the Constitution we have, why, what it was based on, what our founders were thinking and discussing, and then how it's really kind of supposed to work. Really great book, The 5,000-Year Leap. And the title, what it means is, for 5,000 years, nothing had really changed on our planet until somebody came along and created a way for the people to govern themselves. And then you look at the astronomical leap we've taken technologically, economically, et cetera, and the world has been transformed by literally the United States of America. So that's the reason for the title. But Paul Skousen was on back on the 11th. And then I just wanted to say that Kathleen McKinley was on yesterday from Texas. So she's a Texas soccer mom, gun-toting, actually football mom, as she said. And then I just want to let people know, on Thursday, Dion Long is going to be on here. So in a couple days, Dion, good friend of mine, he is going to be talking to us about finance, economic, taxes. And I'm not talking about your personal finance. We're talking about the governments. He's going to delve into with us what's really going on at the Fed, what's going on with our government, and why we're in the kind of debt we're in, and what we can do to get out of it. He'll talk about the gold standard and why that's so important, and ways that we can get back on the gold standard without going completely on it. So really interesting guy. He does a great job of talking about this stuff, and I'm always mesmerized listening to him. He's not only sharp, but he's entertaining. You're going to like Dion Long. He's a funny guy and very smart. So that's what our lineup is. Tell us about who you had on your show Friday, Bella, and who you've got coming up.
Absolutely. I had first guest was Mark Gaster, and Mark Gaster studied political science. He's also, we connected through Facebook, and he's with an organization called the New Crusaders. And are you familiar with them at all?
Yes, yes, I looked them up.
Okay, well, they're new. They've just formed in the last about 4 weeks, and it's a small group right now. But I've been honored to ask to join their organization. I am now formally Knight of the Honor Cross, so I've been knighted. I'm Knight Isabella D'Angelo, and I've committed that, you know, they have a message, and they're modern patriotic knights that work diligently to update the public with, you know, pertinent current events worldwide that go against our creed to furthering the statutes of Judeo-Christian faith and the defense of the American homeland and the holy state of Israel. And it's really a mission of protecting our freedoms and rights. And, you know, I found them on Facebook, as Mark said, you know, because I asked him directly if he wanted to come on the program, and he asked what deciding factors. And I said, you're right in alignment with my mission and my goals of what I'm trying to accomplish in my message that I send out on my radio program every day. So he came on, and you know, we talked a lot about his organization, and then also, you know, talking about, you know, right now my conversation on a daily basis is, you know, how are we going to get back to the Constitution, and what is it we're going to do to be able to we have to make a difference in this next election. We cannot be passive, and we have to start early, and we have to get the message out that we've got an uphill climb, but we can do it because we have to take the House back over. And so he's a great guy. He's coming back on Friday. And then I had Michael Johns on. Tom, are you familiar with Michael?
No. Tell us about him.
Okay. Michael was the former White House speechwriter for Bush. And he is, I'm pulling him up right here, he's very involved with the Tea Party on a national level. He comes down here to Fort Worth quite a bit to work with the chapter here. And again, we had a great conversation all about just, you know, what is it that we're going to do, the involvement of the Tea Party, how we're going to get the message out, and all the different, again, it goes back to the Constitution, you know, talking about the debt ceiling. What are the things that we're going to actually do to make a turn in this administration and in the country, because we're at a catastrophic point in this country. And, you know, it's the Tea Party that really came forward because of our frustration with the two parties that are in, and we're the voice of reason coming out saying we have to do something different, and we're really going to be the group fueling the win in this next election. And then I had on Stacey Coleman, who Stacey is somebody that I connected with over Facebook as well, and he's someone that woke up one day just like me as an everyday patriot and said, how do I make a difference? And when he connected with me and he told me that I have aspirations of someday having a radio program, but I don't know how to do it. I don't have the equipment, how do you even start? And so I said, you know what, come on my program. I want to hear from everyday patriots that are just doing something to get the message out. So we had Stacey on. And then I was honored to have Dejan Lyon, who he is the head of the New Crusaders. And he went into quite depth of their organization and the mission and the goals long-term of the organization to recruit more individuals and the difference in the impact that their organization is doing. He's a very nice guy. He's back on Friday as well. Today I had, she goes by American Mom, and I met her over Twitter, too, a couple of months ago, and we were like-minded in all of our views of what's going on, our concerns, you know, again, what's going on with the Constitution. And we talked for the whole segment, actually. Just the biggest concern is who is going to represent us. You know, I was on Fox yesterday, and the, my biggest concern is that there is no real strong candidate within the GOP that's stepping forward that's getting a lot of interest. And I'm backing Trump in this next election. I see him as somebody that is so passionate, so patriotic. He's so direct and honest and driven, and he knows what it's like to take over a large corporation and tear it apart and put the right people in place, and he's willing to back it with his own funding.
Well, he does have his own funding, that's for sure. But have you looked, what do you think about his background, some of the comments he's made in the past, and in fact him giving quite a bit of money to Rahm Emanuel to run for mayor of Chicago?
Well, I know there's a lot of things in, you know, I don't know enough about the funding. I mean, the Rahm Emanuel thing, I don't have a lot to put in that piece of it, but what I do know is that we don't have anybody that is strongly standing up and getting our attention. And I see Trump as somebody that has come in who has said, I am really tired of what is happening to this country. I absolutely applaud him for going after the eligibility question for Obama, because we can't let that go by. If he truly is not eligible, I mean, it goes against our Constitution. And I don't think people understand it. People tend to brush it off like we're wasting too much time, we're wasting too much energy. But I feel that is one of the most critical pieces for us to know and to find out.
Well, you know, he just came out. This was on CNN, I think, yesterday. He told Anderson Cooper on Anderson Cooper's 360, and every time I see that Anderson Cooper 360, I think about a dog chasing its tail, you know, doing a 360 round and round and round and round. That's Anderson Cooper chasing his tail.
Yeah.
But he told Anderson Cooper that the birth certificate is missing. He's saying that it isn't there, that it doesn't exist. And what we've seen coming out of Hawaii, I know for a fact it's not his long form, but there is no long form. There's no copy of a long form. I don't know that he wasn't born in Hawaii, but I think whatever is on that birth certificate, he doesn't want us to see, like who his real father is or, you know, whatever else may be on it. But he spent a lot of money trying to stop people from getting access. But this is what Trump said yesterday. He said, I've been told very recently, and I would imagine that it wasn't just somebody on Twitter told Donald Trump, somebody somewhat reliable, or at least possibly reliable, told him some information. He's not going to let the cow out of the bag at this point. But he said that the birth certificate is missing. I've been told that it's not there or it doesn't exist. And if that's the case, it's a big problem. So it's either missing, so obviously what's on it, he doesn't want anybody to know, or it doesn't exist. Now, we had Dale Davis on the show not too long ago, a friend of mine in Central Florida, Brevard County there, and he said he actually was working with the Trump people on this issue, and he didn't have all of the inside information, just some of it, but he said what may end up coming out is not that he wasn't born in Hawaii or anything else, but that his, and it's not going to be the birth certificate that's going to give this away, but that he never actually changed his name. So the man that we know as Barack Obama, that's not his real name. It's a different name because he never actually changed it officially. So is that a problem? I don't know if it's a problem or not, but I do know that Trump does like to, you know, blow his own trumpet, so to speak. He likes being out there in the front of things, et cetera. What concerns me about him, Bella, is he's made comments like he supports a single-payer health care system. Now, he may renounce that today and say, look, I was wrong back then when I said that, but it was only a few years ago that he said that. But if it's true and he continues to support single-payer health care, that's a big problem. That's a huge problem because, number one, government can implement whatever insurance program it wants and whatever health care system it wants, but the problem I have with a single-payer is it eliminates all of the free market health care system, it absorbs it all, and then you and I have no choices. like in Canada. You have no choice. You're stuck with what the government says you're stuck with. And he was a supporter of that. So I think the jury's out on Trump. I have said this many, many times. He could win. It doesn't mean he's the best guy, but he could win because you are right. He's got the cojones to stand up and say what he wants to say, and quite honestly, he can get away with it because of who he is. He's not a guy. If Donald Trump were somebody that you and I had never heard of before this, let's say he still was a very successful businessman, but he wasn't who he is
right.
in terms
right.
of celebrity, the media would have dismissed him, and you and I would have dismissed him because we just don't know who he is. One of the advantages I think Trump has is, regardless of his sordid past, whether it be personal or public or business dealings, we already know that's who he is. We already accept him for those shortcomings. And so there's not going to be any big news come out that, like, oh, Donald Trump had an affair when he was with Ivana, or, well, we already know that. You know, Donald Trump did this, or Donald Trump did that, or he, you know, he went through bankruptcy with this particular business. We already know all that. It's
right.
like, it's no news.
Right.
So he does have
exactly.
that advantage. Yeah. I'm a little concerned. I said on the show yesterday that he might be a Trojan horse. That, and now think about this, and I'm not a conspiracy guy, but I am a military tactician. If you really liked Obama and you wanted to see him succeed, what would be one tactic you would take? We did this. First of all, the Soviets did this all the time. They did all kinds of head fake tactics because their aircraft were always inferior to our aircraft, and they had to draw us away with fake, not fake, but airplanes flying at us, flying towards a carrier, whatever situation you were in, to draw us toward them when other fighters coming up through the weeds or, you know, sneaking in, and they couldn't just come face-to-face with us. So that is a tactic, deception tactics, that I learned in the military, and they work very, very well, and I've used them myself, especially when I was an air combat instructor. I taught people how to do that stuff. So deception tactics work very well. So if you had a guy that's got that kind of personality and celebrity like Donald Trump that really is on the side of somebody like Barack Obama, say, hey, listen, why don't you jump in and say you're Republican and make a bunch of noise and make the birth certificate thing a big hoo-ha, and then if you actually were to win the nomination, then I'll produce the birth certificate, and then all the hot air will come out of your balloon, and then you'll just kind of wither on the vine and not push the issue too much. On the other hand, I think even if Donald Trump were supposed to be a Trojan horse and he got the nomination, I don't think he'd say, well, now I'm just going to sit back and let old Barry beat me. Uh-uh. I think he'd go like, hey, guess what? Sorry, Barack, but new game, new day. I'm now going to beat you, and I know I was in here to help you out, but now things have changed. And that's a famous saying at my airline. It's like when we agree to something with the management and then something changes, management says, and our union says to them, but you said this. And then the answer always is, well, things have changed. So I think that's what it'll be. You know, Trump will say, sorry, things have changed. You're fired. Yeah.
Well,
we got plenty of time. We've got plenty of time. We don't have to pick anybody now. But you're right. Trump is drawing a lot of attention to certain issues that most candidates would be too timid to bring up and get involved in. So that is, in a way, a good thing, I think, although the liberals will try and use that to discredit him. But it's not working. That's the thing. It's not working. So anyway.
Well, but here's the thing. So when Amon was on, and I'm sorry, how much time do I have, Tom?
You got all the time you want, Bella.
Okay. So here's the thing.
We'll stay here till midnight.
Careful what you ask for. So the thing is, here's what absolutely just sends my head on fire is that, you know, when I sit here, it's like it doesn't matter. We can talk about all the issues in the world that's wrong in America right now in our administration, and nothing's going to change unless we get into that big chair. And you know, yesterday when I'm on, and it's like, you know, the GOP, nobody's standing up and saying, you know, I really like this guy. This guy's really saying, you know, doing a lot, making sense, and he's bringing solutions, and he's all fired up about it. And that scares me because, you know, Brock could stay in just by default. I mean, he hasn't done anything. He's destroyed everything, but just by default, he could stay in. And if he stays in, and the rest of the agendas that are coming through that he's gonna shove through, I mean, I'll be running after the tornado because I don't want to be around here because we're not even gonna recognize what this country is gonna look like with another 4 years of him in there. And so you know, in this book that I wrote, it's kind of funny because I started calling Trump in my book, and Tom, you haven't read it yet. I need to get you a copy of this. I started saying Trump's got to come in because he's the only one that knows how to run a business. And we have to get a business-minded individual in there that knows, I mean, because ultimately who is responsible? And it's the head guy in any organization. And we have to look at it that way. And we have to stop letting the two parties run the way that they have, because that's what created everybody's frustration and that's what created everybody's complacency, is they threw their hands up and they said, I quit. It doesn't matter who goes in there. I mean, how many times do you hear that? It doesn't matter who's in there. My voice doesn't matter. My vote doesn't count. And you know, when I saw that Trump was starting to come forward, I thought, well, I did tell another radio talk show host back in September that's who should come in here. And everything that he's saying, I mean, you know, I think he just sat back one day and said, you know, I didn't work this hard. And, you know, all of the life experiences that he has made him, you know, a very successful individual. Has he lost a lot? Bankruptcy, divorce, all those other things? Yeah, but those are the things that give you the strength, the wherewithal, the knowledge to come in and handle something so large, and you're right, and the boldness and the kahunas to come in and do it, and you know, that's why we need to get away from, I mean, now is the time, these politicians, you know, I had some faith when we came in and we flipped all those chairs, but, you know, look at what happened. I mean, they conceded, nothing happened. I mean, we have to do something fundamentally different, and I love Trump's message. I think he's absolutely the one to come in and do it.
Yeah. Well, what do you think, Paula? What are you thinking? We've talked about this before, but how are you feeling as you watch the news and see Trump on shows more and more? What are you thinking?
It's hard for me to gauge still, because my opinion is that anybody that goes up there on the platform and says, well, we got to do this for the country, and we need to do that, and we need to do this, and, you know, they all get up there and they tell us what they think we need to hear. But it's our job, it's our right to put in the person that we feel is going to make the right decision and move the country in the right direction. And it's like Bella said, there is a majority of us out there, and I tend to get that way. There is a majority of us out there that just doesn't care anymore, because we go, well, it could be a Democrat, it could be a Republican. It doesn't matter. They're going to raise our taxes. They're going to take stuff away from us. They're going to, you know, whether it's things that, you know, we need in school for the kids, or, you know, a program, or whether it's something to do with the Constitution. They're still going to take those things, and it's our right, our job, to educate ourselves as best as we can. This is only my opinion as to who the right person is for the job, because it is a job. That person is in charge of what goes on in this country. And just because that individual that is given the title of president has managers around him that tell him what to do and what need to be done, and he nods his head and goes, okay, if that's what you say, that for me, that's not right. That's not for me. So, you know, as time goes on, I put more effort. Yes, I do put more effort at times to do the research and figure out who's going to be the right one to put in there.
I thought Obama was going to be the right one, just like I thought Deval Patrick was going to be the right one. Lesson learned.
Yeah. Well, the right one for me is somebody who's going to start talking about cutting the debt. Bella, have you noticed that none of our politicians, whether they be independents, Republicans, communists, Democrats, it doesn't matter. Everyone's got a solution for cutting the, quote, deficit. The deficit, we have deficits. Every year we have a new deficit. And it's how much the government spends that it doesn't have anymore. And their solutions for cutting the spending, the rate at which we go into debt, is to raise taxes, but not cut the size of government. Nobody's talking about cutting the size of government. They're only talking about trading debt for your and my money. But have you heard any politician yet talk about cutting the actual debt, the $14 trillion debt?
They don't know how. They've never been in the business sector. I mean, they're insulated, they're arrogant, they're complacent. They really don't understand just how bad this is, and that's why it scares the ever-living mind out of me, because, I mean, we absolutely can't go at this pace. And then you add
right.
to it the fact of what's going on, you know, the increase in oil right now. There is absolutely no reason for it. I mean, it's going to throw us into hyperinflation. Like, I mean, I wasn't alive when we had super hyperinflation, but I don't want to be here. It's going to come if we continue at the rate that we are, and that's why I am a backer of Trump, because he gets it. He understands what is happening. He sees it, and you know, the madness is that, you know, they should be going in. Okay, let me slow down a little bit. Sorry, get off the. I mean, they don't even understand what healthcare alone is doing to the fact. I mean, in order for, first, we have to cut the debt, and we have to stop the spending. But you can't tax. You can't tax the people to get the money back. We're already $250,000 that we personally owe to that debt. Then you add the fact of how high the unemployment is. Nobody's really hiring. Manufacturing is dead. I mean, it's just a collision course. It's only going to end up worse, and nobody's waking up and getting concerned about it. They seem to think that we're back in the days of like 20 years ago when there was kind of a natural recovery system. But we never had an administration that walked in and threw all the agendas at us, started printing money. I mean, he's running around with the most insanity with a checkbook that we have to yank from him, and nobody sees. I mean, you don't spend your way out of a recession. You certainly don't throw us over into a curve and turn us into, you know, the $14 trillion in debt, and it's not stopping.
Yeah. Well, I just saw an article written by a lib the other day saying, hey, why are we talking about cutting taxes? We need to raise taxes because we're so far in debt. You know, these people don't know history, and Paul and I did a whole show on the Depression. And later in years after I think he had passed away, Henry Morgenthau, who was the Secretary of Treasury, think today, modern-day Timothy the Tax Cheat Geithner. That's who he was back then in the FDR administration, the Secretary of the Treasury. And in his diary, he wrote this, and I'm not reading it. This is from memory. I'm not going to go dig it up. He said, we've spent more money than ever before, and it does not work. After 8 years of this administration, unemployment is just as high as when we started, and now we have an enormous debt to boot. That's exactly what he said. So why does this administration, why does Geithner the tax cheat, why does this inexperienced president think that repeating FDR's mistakes, which put us into a depression within a depression, why do they think that's suddenly going to work today? Because they don't know history. Now, I'm not a trickle-down economics guy. I just know this. Businesses are not investing. Businesses are nervous. I'm not investing. There are things I could be investing in. I don't know where the economy is going to go because we don't have any stability. Until we have stability, a government that says, here is our policy, here's our foreign policy. What is our current foreign policy? Well, in some civil wars in the Middle East, we'll get involved. Other civil wars? No, we won't have anything to do with it. Wow, that's an interesting foreign policy. It's so definitive. What about our energy policy? Well, we're going to plan for green technologies. Which ones? We don't know, but we're going to do it. You know, the president's own commission on energy for the future, and this was early in his presidency, it was in April, so after he got inaugurated in April, came out with a statement saying the projection for where energy use was going to be 30 years from now. 30 years from now. And wind and solar, and wind and solar as part of renewables. Now, they had renewables going up a fair amount, but wind and solar, as a part of their projection, was going to go from today where it's at 0.07% of total energy output in the U.S. to 1.2%. So he stands up there and says, yes, don't worry, gasoline prices are high, it's going to be painful, but within a few years, we'll start solving all your problems with wind and solar. It's not going to happen overnight. I'm all for it. I am all for it. But it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take decades. You know, I'm in Brazil right now, and everybody's familiar with Brazil does the sugar cane, similar to ethanol, but it starts with sugar to begin with. It's not taking corn and turning it into sugar, and then that's an expensive, lengthy process that involves releasing a lot of carbon into the air itself. So they're able to do it much more efficiently, and they have a lot of sugar cane down here in Brazil. It's a large country, and it's very, very agricultural, rural, or whatever you want to call it. And so they can grow this stuff here, and they got plenty of room to do that. Okay. They've spent 35 years building up their sugar alcohol technology and supply to add in, to mix in with the gasoline with the cars. I'm just going to throw this out there as a question I ask people all the time, and until I looked it up, I didn't know the answer either. My impression was that 80% of the cars here was running on cane alcohol, and it turned out to be wrong. After 35 years of pushing and pushing and doing a very good job of this, 20% of their fuel, their total fuel, contains cane alcohol, 20%. So 80% of their fuel that they use in Brazil is petroleum. And where do they get it? They drill it right here. We could be doing the same thing, but no, we don't have a comprehensive energy policy, and there are other administrations. I've been complaining about this since I was a kid, believe it or not. You know, when I took auto mechanics class in high school and worked on cars with my dad and said, Dad, why? And I got to watch through the Jimmy Carter fuel crisis, my dad get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go get in line for 2 hours so he could put gas in the car and we could be able to drive around for the week. I got to see that. And so since I was young, I've been asking questions. Why don't we have a comprehensive energy plan? So we've had a lot of administrations and government officials fail us. But it's just continuing. So we have a president who said it's not going to be business as usual, and it's turned out to not only be business as usual, it's business worse than usual. And that's my complaint.
Yeah, we import 13 million barrels of oil, and 5 million of that is from OPEC countries, you know? Why can't we do it from ours?
Because, I mean, I always wondered why we were always told there was such an oil shortage here. And then when I started learning, I mean, that's what put me out in Williston, North Dakota, was because I learned from somebody about that area. And my fear was that, you know, I've been in corporate sales for 15 years and in manufacturing, and I was scared to death from after 9/11 watching what was happening to manufacturing. And so I did everything in my powers to get out there to Williston to sell drill bits out to the oil rigs. And all of a sudden, I'm learning just how ridiculous this whole, I mean, we could be self-sufficient, self-reliant with oil. I mean, the Bakken alone, it sits on more oil than Saudi Arabia. Then you go into the next formation that they just discovered, which is coming out of parts of Wyoming into Colorado. Then you've got the exploration that's soon going to be heading to the Montana region. And all these company men are up there because of the shutdown with BP. And, you know, I mean, giving the Gulf away to foreign countries and being reliant on the Middle East, none of it makes sense. And if you want to talk about an industry that's booming right now, I mean, that is something that could greatly impact our economy in a short period of time by opening this up. I mean, it's ridiculous that Mexico's gas is cheaper than ours right now. I just had a friend on Facebook say that it just hit $4 a gallon where he is, and he's thinking it's probably 10 by the fall. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. And yet, you know, I think if Sarah Palin could run alongside with Trump, I mean, look at what she did up in Alaska as far as oil. And I mean, this is something that we have to get the attention of. And, you know, part of my mission is raising awareness about the oil industry and drill, baby, drill. I mean, get the word out that we have to get the attention, and we have to have the right person in the seat that's going to listen to us and understand that this is something that we have to change. And I've been in contact with a couple of big oil companies here in Texas, and I've got their ear. I mean, they're interested in getting involved. We're talking about what the partnership would look like, some type of sponsorship. But I told them I'm the voice that's running around to tell everybody and to raise awareness, because so many people just don't even understand how much we're sitting on and what the opportunities and the reasons why, I mean, why I don't understand why the myth has been out there for so long. All I know is that I'm continuing to learn more about it and educate and spread the word, because there's just so much out there and people just don't even know or understand.
No, people, believe it or not, the people that I've spoken to, and there is a lot of people that are aware. If you look around and you see the blurbs on Facebook and you watch it on Twitter, depending on who you're following or who's following you, there are people that are aware of what is available in this country. But it's like you said, why don't we know and why don't we understand? Why is it that we have to rely on someone else for something that is abundant in this country? Do we need?
Do ladies know that Italy? Did you ladies know that Italy is drilling for oil in Alaska?
I did not know that.
It's a company called Eni. I believe it's pronounced. I don't know if it's pronounced. It's Eni. Now, they recently just had an oil spill. Why isn't the media all over that? Well, it was only like 60 gallons of crude sprayed out of a flare vent. So is that an oil spill? Well, yeah, it goes into the ground, but we're pulling oil out of the ground, you know, so we're always concerned about oil getting into the water supply, but we get it out of the ground to begin with. But anyway, they spilled some oil, and it was back maybe a few months ago, and they've got 12 wells in an offshore pad near Spy Island, and the company expects to produce for more than 30 years with a peak of 28,000 barrels a day. Italy, drilling in Alaska. But Shell was told no. Shell wanted to drill in an area of known, where they've found oil. They spent 5 years and $4 billion releasing it, and they know that there's 27 billion barrels of oil waiting at that particular spot. And the Obama administration turned down their permit for drilling. But Italy, A-OK. So we've got a Hippocratic. I don't know what the reason for it is. And people say, "Well, Tom, why would the administration do something like that?" You got me. All I know is we've got a president who couldn't lead a Cub Scout pack running our country. So I have to just guess that it's incompetence. I don't know that it's some grand master scheme to do whatever harm to the U.S. Just we've got an incompetent person at the helm of our country, and our departments like the EPA and Department of Interior, et cetera, are typically incompetent, like the rest of our departments. You know, our government, and Paul and I were talking about this before the show started, we've got all kinds of government agencies that are purely, just totally incompetent. I get to see that firsthand being in the aviation industry with the Federal Aviation Administration, the Department of Transportation, and the TSA. For the most part, incompetent. Led by incompetence, run by incompetence, incompetent. And I see that every day when I go to work. So that's my little rant on the oil industry and Italy drilling in Alaska, but we can't. And this is a fairly recent wells that they've sunk. They've done the research and they got the permits, and our government allowed them to drill for oil in Alaska, but not Shell. So Because we're just trying, as Nancy Pelosi said, I'm just trying to save the planet. Right. Yeah. I don't think Nancy Pelosi's smart enough to save a hangnail from her finger. So.
Is she even a real person, Tom? I don't believe she's real.
You're right. I think she's a synthetic, you know, robot or some such thing. I don't know. It's kind of weird watching her.
She's scary.
Maybe she's a marionette. You just got to look for the strings.
She just absolutely frightens me. You know, Tom, I'm just at the beginning of you know, really digging into this. I mean, certainly I talked a lot with the company men when I was up on the oil rig, but the cool part is that they've remained my friends, and they're wanting to come on the program. And I think, you know, we'll learn more about this. I mean, certainly, you know, most of them that I all know, they've been in the industry 30-some years. They've traveled all over the country. They know an awful lot. And I hadn't quite gotten to this point in knowing that I was going to be such a strong proponent for them once I got on the radio. I mean, things were also coming together. But, I mean, we're going to learn because, obviously, I mean, they know a lot. They're willing to come on. And, I mean, the insanity, yeah. Why? I mean, there has to be a way to be able to figure out how and why some of these nonsensical things, and then, you know, how do you start the process to get somebody in the position to understand that this is something that we have to change?
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, we're pretty much out of time, but we'll do this. We'll talk about this. I was going to get in this article that was written by Chuck Roger and or Roger, if he pronounced his name that way. But this is an interesting topic, and you're just kind of hitting on this now, Bella. Read at the beginning that only a small, barely a majority of American likely voters believe that government has solutions. In other words, they think that government actually does solve a lot of things. So I find that unsettling. But here's what he said, and then there's a great paragraph that I'll read tomorrow. But he says, powerful or influential people using falsehoods to manipulate other people's behavior is not a new phenomenon. 100 years ago, father of modern psychology, William James, observed, there's nothing so absurd that if you repeat it often enough, people will believe it. And this big lie technique caught fire in the John Dewey, Woodrow Wilson, and FDR days of the progressive era. The concept has found fertile ground today in the gray matter inside the skulls of American progressives ever since. So we'll talk a little bit more about that article, but it's a really well-written article, and there's a section in there that I want to read tomorrow that talks about some of this. If you repeat it often enough, it becomes believable, or the up is down, down is up type of speak, and he's got a whole list of them that it really got my attention. So in any case, are you going to be able to come back with us tomorrow, Bella?
Absolutely.
Okay. Look forward to having you. That'll be fun, and we'll be doing this again tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern time. It's the American Hour. We've got Paula, Bella, myself, Tom on the show, and we'll talk more about current events. I'll bring a few more constitutional concepts up, and we've talked about this before, Bella, but I know people just don't know this, and Paul and I have talked about this. We're going to talk about some of the things that the Congress does to pass legislation that is completely unconstitutional, but they've rationalized it. You know, it's like when you're a kid and your mother caught you with your hand in the cookie jar and said, did I not tell you no cookies until after dinner? What were you thinking? Well, I was thinking that I was hungry, but I said no cookies before dinner. Okay. And then 5 minutes later, she catches you with your hand in the cookie jar again. Like, what is wrong with you? But I'm hungry. I mean, you know, but I'm hungry. But I, you know, it's like, oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's where my mom started to slap us, you know, at that point. Slap us silly because, you know, as Bill Cosby said, and I think it's more so for the little boy, but when you're little, you're just dumb. You're brain dead. You're trying to learn and absorb so much stuff that you just can't think, you know, realistically, or you can't think logically. And so he goes through a little scheme of, you know, his kid doing something similar to that and rationalizing and just because, you know. So in any case, that's where I think people are.
No, you can't fix stupid, Tom.
That's right. You can't. And I've had conversations with some dumb people that just could not grasp very, very simple concept. But in any case, all right, ladies, well, it was a pleasure having you both on. Paula, we'll talk again tomorrow before the show. And then, Bella, I look forward to having you come on the show. We'll continue this conversation tomorrow. This is the American Hour. I'm Tom Garcia. You've been listening to the American Hour with me, Paula Osman, and Bella D'Angelo. And we will be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Thanks for joining us. All right. Good night, ladies.
Have a good night, Tom.
Good night.
Nice to meet you, Bella.
Hi.
Nice meeting you, Bella.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.